I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me.
Hello and welcome to the S-Words Podcast, a roundtable discussion about pop culture subjects beginning with the letter S. I'm Kevin Chu.
I was dead, but I got better. I'm Dominic Nguyen.
I'm Andy Scheffler.
I am Joss Whedon. No.
We're very happy to have you here, Mr. Whedon. So how have you been doing?
Apparently you're the last man on this podcast, so you'll have to tell us about what it's like to be a man, too.
Man? What is man?
A miserable pile of secrets.
Oh. Build stuff in caves with piles of scraps.
That's Iron Man.
It's still a man.
Danny? I am an active. I could be anyone.
Anyways, Josh is in fact Sung Lee.
Yeah.
Whoa.
My mind is blown.
This is Danny City Rockham.
That makes me Eliza Dushku.
That's not fair. I want to be Adam Baldwin.
I'd be Alan Tudyk, but I'm not even sure how to pronounce his last name.
That was Amy, by the way.
Hi, guys. This is Amy.
So let's go with the usual topic we like to start off with. Wait. The topic is...
Serenity. Serenity. Very good,
Kevin. Basically, our way going into the Whedonverse. So you guys have been waiting for this one. We've had actually some people write in. Why do you keep pushing it back? Well, here it is, okay?
Yeah. Yay! Whedonverse! Whee!
So
fangirl.
Let's go into the usual topic that we usually like to ask around here. So what was the first time you saw Firefly? Or the Serenity movie?
So this is a big jerk store story for me, because the first time I saw Firefly or Serenity was the Serenity movie, which you guys took me to. And at end of the Serenity movie, I stood up and had this big grin on my face and put my hands on my hips and went, "Wow, that was an excellent movie. Perhaps they should make a television series from it. I bet it would last forever." And then, you know, Kevin just sort of tried not to look like he was with me. Danny, I think you were there too. You also tried very hard not to look like you were with me. Chris was there too, and I think I kissed him on the lips.
And I'm pretty sure I remember Serenity.
That was the night you kissed Chris.
Yes.
What?
No, I don't think that was Serenity. I think that was another
It was Serenity.
No, no, it was
Serenity.
It was one of those all male outings.
Yes. The kind we had very frequently in college.
You tackle so many men to the floor, it's hard to tell sometimes.
It's true. Ooh, but yeah, that was my first time.
That was your first time?
Of course it was.
No.
Chris left the armchair. Oh, wait, no.
Did you guys hear
Andy's face plants?
Actually, yeah, I kissed Hung before, too. That's true.
Hung?
I don't know. Are you Hung?
I'm not Hung.
Oh, Kevin's not Hung.
Andy's not Hung, but he lives with someone who is.
I'm sorry, I've been rendered speechless for the last minute.
Should we ever explain that joke?
No. If we ever have a live show at a con, we'll explain it if you ask it.
It's true, okay.
And by explain, I mean dance around. Yeah. This episode is about Serenity in the Whedonverse.
Yes. So yeah, that was the first time I had ever seen any Whedon stuff, and I was like, okay, I can see how this is enjoyable.
You hadn't seen Buffy or Angel or anything by Joss Whedon prior to that. Damn.
You have seen Dr. Horrible.
Well, yeah, I've seen Dr. Horrible, but that came way after the Serenity movie. The Serenity movie was what, 2005? 2004? 2005, I think. Four? Five?
Five.
Five.
2005.
Yes, I was right the first time. Yeah. Okay. And also the third and the fourth and the sixth time, but who's counting?
You count the first one or the second one.
Yeah. So anyway, I was like, okay, this is kind of enjoyable. And then I started looking into Firefly, and I found that Firefly was much more enjoyable than the movie was. I was like, hey, I can deal with this.
Hey. TV? TV song.
And then the next thing I saw out of Joss Whedon after that was X-Men, followed by Dr. Horrible.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. Mostly enjoyable, with some annoying habits.
Yeah, so for me, I'm also one of those people who I haven't gotten around to watching Buffy yet. It's on my list of things to do, you know, at some point. I first saw Firefly when it came out on DVD. I had heard so many good things about it that I just bought the DVD.
Oh, cool.
Especially given that you can get it for like $10 these days. Or even back then, too.
Yeah. Well, I need to... I hope it's only $10, because I lent it out to someone. I don't remember who. No idea where it is. But I had this urge to watch it again, so I'm going to have to just buy it again.
Or you can watch it on Hulu.
Box?
No.
Buy the Blu-ray.
But I don't have a Blu-ray player yet.
Buy the PS3.
Buy the Blu-ray.
Yeah. It's not on Blu-ray yet.
Way to fit that in, Danny.
You're welcome.
Congratulations. Sporn.
But yeah, also I pretty much bought almost every comic he's written.
Or you could buy the HGTV player for the Xbox. And then buy the HDTV box set for Firefly.
All free by now.
Wait, yeah. There's no HDDVD for Firefly.
Oh, no, that's for Serenity. That's
there's
right.
There's one for Serenity, but now yeah. We have Serenity on Blu-ray, too.
In fact, it's sitting on the coffee table right over there.
I own Serenity in both HDDVD and Blu-ray.
But why?
Do you even have an HDDVD player?
Yes, I do. I have one right there.
Oh, nice.
You're like a DVD sommelier, I swear to God.
What's a sommelier? Is it a smelly dude?
No.
Sommelier.
Is he...
An expert. Let's just say you're an expert. Like a wine sommelier.
No. Because sommelier sounds more snotty.
You're like a DVD maitre d'.
Isn't that like a waiter?
Shut up.
Let's just keep going. Jesus.
There's a Big Bang Theory quote that was like, when you don't have any French words to use, you're still not going to be right. It's au contraire.
Yeah.
Anyways, I'll start at the beginning, which was the first Whedon thing I ever saw, which was actually probably the Roseanne show, because that's where he started.
Damn, really?
Yeah, he wrote like two episodes or something like that.
There's a reason why Sung was specially invited for this episode.
And then by specially invited, you mean he always comes.
But then the...
That's what she said.
No, that's generally not what she says.
But Sung is the only man here.
It's generally what she says, not what she says.
So much heavy face palming.
That's two so far.
Anyways.
You're going to have to get a new table left to buff out all the forehead marks on this thing after.
So the first real Joss Whedon thing I ever saw was the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie. And I don't even remember what year that came out.
Wait, he did the movie?
No. Yeah.
He wrote the movie.
Oh, that's right. Titan A.E.
What?
Titan A.E. Yes, that was the first Joss Whedon.
Thanks for taking it.
Didn't he also do, what's it called, Toy Story?
He did some portion.
He did, yes. Story.
Yeah. Anyways, so the Buffy movie, I actually watched that in theaters because my brother's like, hey, let's watch this. It looks interesting. So that was my first exposure to real Joss Whedon, even though that wasn't really his, he hates it, but whatever.
Her in my arms.
And then I watched the TV series and I watched Angel. And then, as I was going to Comic-Con, he would always have panels. And one year he was pimping this new series called Firefly. And I was with Egan at the time. Egan, if you don't know, he is currently a writer for Anime News Network. He used to work for Viz and a few other places. So we were sitting there. I think it was Ballroom 20, probably.
It has to be.
Yeah, because Hall H didn't exist at that point. So he showed a clip of the pilot episode, and he showed, what's it called? River in the suitcase thing, and it opens up. And Egan and I just looked at each other and went, is that Outlaw Star?
I remember when that show came out, people were like, it's Outlaw Star! Because he took one thing from it.
Yeah. And then, like, people kept on comparing it to, like, Cowboy Bebop and whatnot. And then when it actually started airing, I tried watching what was the first aired episode, which is a train job. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on. I'll just stick with Angel and Buffy. So, yeah, that was my first exposure to Firefly.
But yeah, actually, I was actually there for, well, not that specific conversation, but, I was there for the initial concept when Sung was describing it. About, it's basically live action Cowboy Bebop. Little Outlaw Star. I'm like, how does that even work?
Because it's a Western in space.
Yeah.
And there are many of them.
Yeah, this is before I'd gotten, cultured in the, cultured on the concept of the space Western, which is.
Oh yeah, I will say that, like, after, like, It was long after Firefly stopped showing on the air that I decided to watch it, because I had finished, I think at that point, Buffy had finished and Angel was just about to finish. I'm like, okay, I need more Joss Whedon. So I started watching it.
But yeah, one of my old roommates, he got the DVD and pretty much got it based on the reviews that he got. Because at the time, there were like several hundred reviews for it on Amazon. It still had average 5 stars. That alone was reason enough for him to go, okay, fine, let's look into this. And so he picked it up, and we watched it, and I stole his DVD set and got him another one. And actually, might have been the other way around, but I do recall him wanting his DVDs back, so I had to get another one. And yeah, it started from there.
Is it the only TV show that Miho will watch?
In all likelihood, yes.
All right. Yeah, because Miho hates watching television or movies. She only likes playing video games and reading manga.
Miho seems to always know when we're talking about her, even though she's wearing headphones.
Yeah, no explanation for that.
All right.
I have an explanation for that. Miho, do you have the devil's ears?
All right. So I actually saw probably the majority of the first season of Buffy, but I just never really picked it up again afterwards, just because, you know, it was at that age where you don't really like keep track of stuff, and it's like, oh, this is great, and then, oh, look, okay, season's over, and then you just forget about it over, you know, the course of the next season. So anyways, I saw some Buffy.
Age where you had a memory of the goldfish?
Yes.
Oh.
That's most of my years below what?
It's like high school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My memory is like a goldfish, like that. I have selective memory. But anyway,
what
so...
What did you just say?
I have selective memory. What? What? Where am I?
Why is there a microphone in front of me?
I just got it.
Who are you people? Let's see. So I actually saw the Serenity movie after watching Firefly. And I started watching Firefly because some friends sat me down. They're like, you know what? It's time for you to watch this. It's awesome. And it was awesome. And Serenity was not so much awesome.
Really? Okay.
See? I'm not the only one here.
Quiet, jerk store.
Anyways, the first time I watched Firefly, and this goes back to Sung as well. We were at Sung's place, and Sung's like, hey, you guys should watch this. We watched the pilot episode of Firefly. Didn't gel with me so much, because that first episode does actually go a bit slowly, and when you're with a group of people, you kind of want to watch something that's a bit more action-oriented. But I still borrowed the box set, and I remember during that week, I did watch all of it. It took me, once I got to the train job, then it was sort of like, okay, I have this many hours in the day, and then I have to go to class during these hours, so if I can pace these in here. I did the same thing with a lot of my other favorite TV shows.
Yeah, I know that math very well.
I had to return the set the next week, and because someone else had to borrow it. So I did watch all of it, and yeah, it's, you know, it's very rare for me to go to a TV series and really, really get excited about it and just watch it. And, like, when I'm not watching it, think about watching it. But Serenity was, Firefly was one of them. And I remember also when we saw the Serenity movie, that was, to me, like the culmination of, wow, you know, I didn't even expect this movie would be this good. But I love the movie
really?
Way more than I love the series.
Really?
Really?
I really do. And I think it's mostly because it's a lot of the content packed in really tightly. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, I mean, yes, there are certain moments in the movie where it does feel like, yes, he's rushing this and it sucks that he couldn't flesh it out, but I enjoy the movie very, 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 very highly.
Well, I guess we'll have to disagree on that one.
We'll agree to disagree. Anyways, I asked you guys before this episode to come up with your favorite episode from Firefly, or you can choose Serenity if you wish. I know some of you guys are not big fans of Serenity, but anyways, what is your favorite episode, Mr. Don?
I was actually talking with Danny about this earlier this week, and it's the episode written by one of my favorite writers and creators, Ben Edlund, who created The Tick.
Yes.
And he's also an assistant on the Venture Brothers. It's Janestown. An awesome, awesome episode on several levels. It really does run the entire gamut of emotion from comedy to, you know, a little bit of romance and a little bit of class struggle and a little bit of tragedy. And it just does this really well. And, you know, even when you get to the sort of inevitable conclusion, you still come out of it, you know, laughing a bit. And I just enjoy the entire episode in general. And hey, guess what? It was a Ben Edlund episode.
Yep. The, like, one of my favorite lines from that episode was, No, this is what it feels like to go insane.
which is prefaced by, this must be what it feels like to go mad. Followed by a few minutes later by the second the reprise of that line.
Well, what about you, Andy?
My favorite would have to be Our Mrs. Reynolds.
Oh.
Yes. With Saffron.
That was actually the first episode.
Miho's favorite character.
let's never speak of that again.
How does she do that?
Who knows again?
We're talking about her.
I'm sorry, I got distracted.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Miho. She is the shadow.
Sure.
So what about you, Sub?
For me, it's like the things I remember most are just these key moments, and they're spread out throughout the entire series.
It's hard to pick a favorite.
So, I mean, like, I could pick out, like, moments. But I guess if I had to pick out a single episode, it would have to be Out of Gas.
Kevin cringes because he knows this is ticket.
At first I was like, okay, I know people are going to pick easy ones like Janestown.
How is Out of Gas not easy?
Look, there's six of us and there's only 14 episodes. What do you think the odds are? Out of Gas is a really well shot episode.
Yeah,
it's just that opening scene of, not of Mal falling down, but of him and...
By a ship like this, treat her well.
Yeah.
She'll be with you the rest of your life. Yes, sir. Because it's a death
trap. he goes, don't think about what it is, just think about what it can be. What's that, sir? The freedom.
Yeah.
It's like, no, what's that, sir? And she points on the ground.
Oh, something must have been living in here. Let's walk around now.
It's just a brilliantly written episode. It is.
Well, it's a brilliantly shot episode, too. Yeah. I really like the transitions between scenes. They just, it really smoothly flows between, you know, where he is in the present and other scenes that have happened that happen to be the origin of all the crew.
Yeah, and it actually has also, it's also the set of one of my favorites, like, the reason for one of my favorite stories about Firefly and Serenity in general, which was that apparently Alan Tudyk took that button that was designed to call everybody, like, when they managed to find help. At the end of the series, when they were talking about, you know, getting in negotiations for making the movie, Alan Tudyk, who had taken that button from the set, who had stolen it off the set when they were breaking down the set, delivered it to Joss Whedon and says, "When your miracle comes, hit the button."
Was it actually programmed to call them?
I wouldn't put it past him, but I kind of doubt it.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
But yeah, like Out of Gas would have been like the perfect pilot, actually. Because it really...
Because it gives you the backstory.
Yeah, it gives you the backstory of all characters.
It definitely would have had to come...
It works either way, but, you know, it's just a remarkable episode.
I think it was important to actually know who the people were in advance.
That's true.
So you wouldn't get too attached to Bester, for example. And, you know, you wouldn't get too attached to, say, Wash with the mustache.
Sorry, we're just having flashbacks to the outtakes.
Which, by the way, are awesome.
This episode is going to have a lot of spoilers. You haven't seen.
Oh, yes, by the way.
But I think you should have figured that out before you saw this.
Spoiler! It's a Joss Whedon story. People will die at random for no good reason. Spoiler!
If you haven't seen Firefly or Serenity yet, please pause this podcast. I don't care where you are. Purchase some DVDs.
Or even without DVDs, you can go to www.hulu.com/Firefly, where they have all of it for free.
I say my DVDs anyways.
I know, but still.
Like that.
You can watch it in 480p.
Yeah, but this is the thing, is that Hulu.com/Firefly is immediate. And then you can buy the DVDs.
On Blu-ray.
Oh, wow. They're even listed in like chronological order.
They're listed in good order, yes.
And after you watch Firefly, go ahead and pop in your Blu-ray of Blade Runner. Because it just pretty much goes straight into it.
No, it's Battlestar.
It's not Battlestar.
Keep going, guys. Let's keep going with the episode. Since that
was mentioned, I should say that if you hadn't heard the story, I won't go into the whole story, but Fox really, really screwed up Firefly, which is they completely aired it in the wrong order. And they did other stuff, like not showing the pilot episode.
Yeah, it was airing against baseball a lot, so a lot of those episodes got spread apart and people just couldn't follow. Like you usually would just turn on the television at the same time every week.
Yeah.
Yeah, those of you who know TV know that people who know TV complain a lot about Fox.
Yeah.
A lot. And especially the Family Guy crew complains about Fox constantly.
Hey, they're giving them 3 shows now.
Oh, yeah, now I'm starting to complain about Family Guy because Cleveland Show and American Dad are kind of... What's that, sir?
Well, the jokes that don't make it into Family Guy have to go somewhere. The jokes that don't make it into American Dad have to go somewhere.
Those manatees have to continue working.
Yeah. I thought it was porpoises.
Manatees.
Manatees, okay. Yeah.
But porpoises are way too smart for that.
All right, keep going.
But yeah, my favorite episode is actually the same one as Sung's, Out of Gas, because it was just a really...
See, Kevin, 2 people took your episode. You should have got first.
Yeah, that's what you get for being close. I'm trying to be gracious about this. Go ahead. In fact, mine is Out of Gas, if you haven't figured it out. Danny, you can explain for them, too, for me. Out of Gas.
You've already explained it.
All right, I win. I get War Stories, actually, is my favorite episode. And that's the one where they...
Mal dies?
Yeah, they take Mal's ear. It was awesome. Yeah, and then that's the one.
Yes.
And it's one of... It's one of my favorite Jane lines as well. I'll be in my bunk. Oh, and that's the one where Inara has her female client, which was also...
Yeah.
Which is the reason why Jane...
Which is the reason for Jane's line.
And spoiler for the episode, but I like pretty much towards the end when it's like...
The fake, sir, I think we have to...
No. It was Zoe saying like...
Wait, is this something he needs to do for himself?
No, it isn't!
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I like the fake romantic scene at the end where it's like, sir, I think we have to get it on. Or whatever that line was.
No, take me, sir.
Yeah, take me hard.
And then Jane goes and is like, well, that's just disturbing.
and washes will be in our bunk.
So the only flaw of that episode for me, which actually makes it better, is the torture scene where it's Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk, and they're faking the fact that they're getting electrocuted, so they just go...
It's great!
Shaking around.
It's great!
In the audio commentary, they say like that they were literally in pain after that because they're like, they had to...
Jerk around.
Yeah. And pretend to tense up and stuff like that, and so they said they're hurting by the end of it.
But it's just silly watching it, you know? Because you just... I don't know. It's like the kids on the playground who do cowboy deaths, where they clutch their chests and then they go to their knees and then fall backwards or whatever. And it just seems that kind of theatrical. But it actually makes the episode better.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, Niska is an awesome villain, I think. Because we're not so solid, no?
And they kept him alive, too.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't have more serious to actually bring him
back. Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, well.
So, Kevin, out of gas.
Yep, out of gas is mine. Anyways, so I also asked you guys to come up with your favorite character from Firefly and Serenity. So, let's go in the opposite order. So, Amy will go first.
Oh, wait, I thought Kevin would go first.
No, I'll still go to last.
Okay. Don't be surprised if you get taken.
I know none of you will take mine. Don't go trying to get
Inara! No.
The great neck.
It's the ship. The ship itself.
Jubal Early.
It's the great neck. No, go ahead, Amy.
All right. Well, it's Mal, of course. I don't know. I'm sure someone
Nathan
else will say
is the finest piece of ass on that show.
Seriously,
right?
that was a nice ass in that episode where he's nude.
And
trash. Yes, but I do like Jane for his lines at the very least.
You can only choose one.
Mel, but Jane with the runner-up.
There's a great thing that Nathan Fillion said on one of his panels, which was like someone asked him like, what was the most difficult scene to shoot, and Nathan goes like, well, there was that. What was that time that I was naked? Like, oh yeah, there was that episode where I was naked too.
All right, can I say Simon Tam because he's hot?
You already said 2!
But still, I changed my mind.
Earlier this week, Amy and I were also having a conversation about who the hottest people in Firefly were.
Yes.
And I was like, Nathan Fillion #1.
Nathan Fillion was #1 until I saw the episode with Sean Marr with the shirt off, the one where the episode with Jubal Early.
You should see Die from Clausen's Pier.
Hi. What?
Die from Clausen's Pier.
Okay.
It stars him and Michelle Trachtenberg.
Is he shirtless?
Yes.
Awesome!
And then it's like, who's #3? What is it? Marina Baccarin. Except that she's gotten all freaky looking lately.
She's gotten a lot thinner.
So okay. she has alien cheekbones. And she keeps playing aliens.
Yes. She was the bad guy in SG-1.
Yeah. She was the crazy girl in How I Met Your Mother.
Crazy eyes.
Anyway.
What about you, Danny?
Let me think.
This is your opportunity to say out of gas first.
Oh, I know.
My favorite character.
The gas. Out of gas.
No,
it's the button.
I'm going to have to go with Wash, just because he's hilarious.
Wash is great.
And despite the fact that he's
you and your inevitable betrayal.
Yes. he does do the primary opening for the series, you know. Like, there's the major dramatic opening of the Battle Serenity itself, except... And then, you know, when you first see the ship, and you first see the console and the talking dinosaurs, you just know this is going to be awesome.
And we will call it...
This land. And yeah, the fact that...
Oh, curse your... What is it? Inevitable betrayal.
You're
surprising but inevitable betrayal.
Like, he's just really easy to relate to because, you know, he's...
Because we're
plucky,
geeks.
He's plucky comic relief. He's married. And he can't find his way out of a paper bag.
And that's what Alan Tudyk says is the key to the character, is that he is the complete polar opposite from everyone else on the ship.
He is the straight man.
For me, I guess it would have to be Jane. Not only because Adam Baldwin is awesome and Chuck, but but that certainly helps. But yeah, like he has a lot of great lines, and he's such a simple character.
He's so easy to figure out.
Yeah, and like he is so true to himself that like if you watch Out of Gas, he has like his origin story. Or at least how he gets on the ship is awesome.
You have to share a bunk.
That guy.
And he goes like, so which one of these guys do you think tracked us down? The ugly one, sir. It's like, could you narrow that down for me? And then Janestown is just pure awesome. It could be just because.
What about you, Andy?
Oh, well, I wanted to say Kaylee, but I'm gonna have to go with Wash.
Oh, you're not going with Kaylee?
Yeah,
that's cold.
Know.
I'm going to change mine to Kaylee just so that she doesn't feel left out.
Okay, fine. I'll say Kaylee because we already said Wash.
Yeah.
Pressure. Those are some good.
Also, it doesn't hurt the fact that I'm currently watching the last season of Stargate Atlantis where she plays the Doctor.
Oh, nice.
And she doesn't die, unlike a lot of other Doctors on Stargate.
But that, just because you die in Stargate doesn't mean you're dead.
Oh, right. Just because you become a god doesn't mean you're going to stay a god.
Spoiler.
All right, my choice is not really that comedic. It's Shepherd Book, who is not even the moral core of the show. He's more of the moral commentator of the show because he's just so confused about everything. And, you know, it's a very good reflection of the, you know, Sergio Leone era Western, where you don't know who the good guy is a lot of the time because the good guys are jerks or murderers. And so he spends a lot of time trying to sort of be the voice of morality and going, I was wrong. Where did that come from?
I don't know. He's a mystery himself, though.
He is a mystery himself. But, you know,
doesn't Jim Ward have something to say about killing?
The next Firefly comic book series is going to
be about Shepherd Book's past.
Yay.
Where they suggest that he was, one of those ghost guys in the Serenity movie. Yeah. And is that going to be your character, by the way, the ghost guy in Serenity?
Ghost guy?
He's wondering if you picked the operative.
Yes, I did.
Yeah! High five, Danny! Suck it!
Oh my god.
Suck it!
Yeah, we're good.
This is an honorable death.
I love Chiwetel Ejiofor. He's a great actor. He's been in a lot of smaller roles, but it was really cool seeing him in Serenity and getting to be such a badass, because a lot of his other movies, not so much, including one in which he cross-dressed. I forgot what those called. Kinky Boots. That was...
Oh. What are you talking about? Some people are more badass after they cross-dress. Look at Terrence Stamp. After Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Look at the roles he got.
Why do you bring up that movie so often?
There's actually a story of his sister and his childhood and his sister wanting him to be a transvestite when he grew up.
Yeah. Let's move on from that topic, though.
You learn something new about Dom every day. Not for me, but for you listeners.
But yes, the operative. Let's talk about the operative.
So badass. And like the first time I saw like a villain in the whole Firefly universe, I was actually like, oh, you know, other than the men with the blue hands, right? Which are really not that big of a deal because you don't see them that often. But I was like, wow, it's awesome. Not only is he kind of cool, but he's actually a real established actor. He's actually acting. And I was just like, man, this could totally launch his career. And then Serenity didn't do too well. So he's getting there. I like that character. I like he has a no name. I like that even that part of the trailer was like, where are you, little girl? And I was like, as cheesy as it is, and I know some things is cheesy.
No, it worked for the movie.
Yeah, I like him in there. I wish we would get more of him, even though, you know, you can't. But
well, isn't he in the movie that's out now or coming out soon? I saw him in some trailer.
Now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, this also works great because we're going to talk about the Serenity movie coming up. So what do you guys like? What do you don't like?
Oh, I don't like that it didn't continue.
I don't like that they killed off characters.
I know, that was sad.
It wasn't sad, it was random. There's
yes,
a difference.
That too.
I am a leaf on the wind.
Watch how I soar.
But yeah, so here's the thing. This is a very common complaint about anything Joss Whedon, whether it was his X-Men run. Actually, I don't think he killed anyone in his X-Men run, did he?
Oh, he actually brought people back.
Yeah. Never mind. Oh, that's right. It's because it's X-Men and no X-Men has ever permanently died except for Thunderbird?
Although Jean Grey
Sunfire.
Jean Grey's been dead for an awful long time now.
Okay. But still, she's done that before. Yeah. But anyway, so this is the thing, is that a character dies at complete random in Serenity, and it's what people call the pathos button. When Joss Whedon wants things to be sad, someone dies. Because that's the way he knows how to do it.
Well, here's the thing. At least for his longer running TV series, when a major character dies, it is to basically create a turning point in the season or the story. And I could go off and start spoiling Buffy and Angel for people.
Please
don't.
But I'll just say when a major character dies, it is for a reason. And I mean, it's not always, you know, like, did you really have to kill that person? And his answer is yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the thing is that one of the deaths in the Serenity movie, that makes sense. It actually does create a dramatic moment, you know?
Yeah.
The other one is just...
Leave a bunch of loose ends, but other than that.
Yeah, it left a bunch of loose ends. But here's the thing is that the second death in the movie, you went, what the fuck was that? But yeah, so it's just like, all right, we've made it through. Hey, look, the person closest to the window randomly died. Why? That has no meaning. It doesn't create any, you know, real tension. It makes you just tilt your head to the side and go, why did he do that?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people said. I mean,
if I had to guess, I think like during the contract negotiations, he basically says to
Alan Tudyk,
to the actor, okay, you're going to die at some point in the series. And, you know, since they aren't going to have much more series, maybe, they just went, oh, I better kill you now.
Maybe he just said to Alan Tudyk, you know, Steve the Pirate was a really popular character, and I don't think we can afford you for future shows.
I was wondering if Steve the Pirate was going to come up.
He has to come up.
Yar.
But spoiler, Alan Tudyk is in Dollhouse.
Oh, does he play that character? Everyone's like, who's this character?
Yes.
Thanks,
spoiler.
Guys.
You're welcome.
Probably by this point figured it out anyways on my own.
So anyway, yeah, so that was my main complaint about Serenity. It's just like, that was dumb. You know, there are deaths in film that make you, weep. There are deaths in film that make you, that leave you with a bunch of questions, you know. I mean, an entire Citizen Kane movie is based around a question about his death. You know,
that was not his sled.
I can't even say spoiler about that. The movie's older than like any three of us in this room combined.
Yeah. Anyways, I will say that Joss's official answer to why he decided to kill off that particular character, I mean, it's pretty obvious which character it is, but I'm just gonna continue being vague about it. Is that he said that basically it was towards the end of the movie and he wanted it to feel like there was real peril. And so he was saying the simplest way to do that was to say, you know, hey, look, I could kill off this character. What if I killed off, like, that, then that means that anyone else could die as well in the final fight, which isn't a terribly good reason.
It's a really bad reason. But this goes back to another complaint that I have with Joss Whedon, is that in some ways, a lot of his flow doesn't work out very well at all. Like, he has, Dollhouse started really slowly, which is why I still haven't watched it.
Well, that's something that I could get into a little bit more detail later.
But anyway, we'll keep going. What else did other people like about Serenity, the movie? Let's get onto the positive here.
I enjoy the movie.
Whole thing.
I always like certain moments, like the a lot of them are Jane moments.
Grenades.
Yeah, like boy, I wish we had some grenades.
I wish we had some grenades right about now. And then, of course, 2 hours later, tell me you brought them. Last two.
And then there's the what's it called? Like, do you want to run this ship? Yes.
Well, you can.
I like the outtakes.
Oh god, the outtakes are the best part.
Anyway, I actually don't remember that much about Serenity. It's been a while since I watched it.
Yeah, it's been a while, and I didn't really feel like rewatching it for the
exactly.
podcast.
Exactly. But the outtakes are fantastic.
Yes.
So if you get your hands on the DVD, watch the bloopers.
Shepard, put him in a place of honor. Wasn't there a baby back there? You little, what is it, like manger?
Take a dirt nap next to baby Jesus.
Towards the beginning of the movie was like when you first see the ship, and you see it's like all graceful and everything, and then it all kind of goes out to crap, as things usually do. That's just like, it's just such a clever, very Whedon-esque opening for a series.
Yeah, especially since it is isn't it a direct reference to the Star Wars standard Star Wars opening where you see the ship going over?
That's all the time now.
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty much how every space movie begins now, doesn't it? On the bottom side of a ship going by.
Sure. Anyways, let's go into this. Since we know this is an opportunity to break out into the Whedonverse, I asked you guys this question earlier this week as well. Why do you think Joss Whedon has become this big part of geek culture? Why him in particular? Because his name is a big deal when you talk to people on the internet, but if you talk to people on the street, they're kind of confused.
Yeah. I think the main thing is, at least in our particular circle of friends here, it's become something almost on the level of Darmok.
Oh.
In that we can
Darmok and Jalad. Tanagra.
In that we can.
Oh, Andy's forehead is moving forward. Let's continue this.
I think I know what this is.
Zinda, his face black, his eyes red.
No, I'm lost again.
You haven't gotten to the episode yet.
Okay, so yeah, basically talking about.
Yeah, if you're only in season four, you're not there yet.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now. Okay, yeah, okay, so I got you.
The basic idea is like the quotes of the series are just so entertaining that they've become a portion of our lexicon.
Like well, that's for us, though.
I can't speak for geek culture at large, but for us, we could basically supplant entire conversations with quotes from either Firefly or The Simpsons.
The thing about, in my opinion, the geek culture that has come up around Joss Whedon is two things. One is because he's touched on pretty much every kind of mainstream fantasy already. He's done space opera. He's done space wolves slash west, more space western.
Yeah.
He's done vampires. He's done comic book mutants. You know, and so pretty much the only thing you're missing from there is spies.
Oh.
Like super spies.
Isn't that what he's doing now, though?
With Dollhouse, right?
Kind of.
Sort of.
So we're
I can speak about it a little bit more in detail.
The other thing about it is that people like being the underdog, and he is so consistently persecuted. They feel like they're in a noble cause for a TV show.
The other thing no one has brought up yet, which is Dr. Horrible, and how during the writer's strike, just managed to say, "Hey, you, a bunch of my friends, let's go make something," and it ends up making all this money because.
And now it's nominated for an Emmy.
Yeah, they created their own category just to nominate
it. How do you get nominated for an Emmy? It was never on TV.
Well, the category is for some sort of
short
form production that not broadcast.
What?
Or something that has alternative.
They created
a YouTube
category.
Like
they created a category for it. Yeah.
Anyways,
better win.
I will say
it's sort of the Beauty and the Beast thing, right? Didn't they create the best animated feature?
No, they created feature category way later.
Yeah,
Beauty and the Beast was nominated for best picture.
Best Picture.
But yeah, but I think that
the very first winner of animated feature was Shrek, I believe.
Was it Shrek? Okay.
Yes.
Sadly.
Yeah.
But they pretty much did that because they wanted a space for these.
Well, okay, I will say that what hasn't been mentioned is that Joss Whedon has always kind of been ahead of the times. Like, people copy Joss Whedon. Like, his style, what you see on TV today is largely because of writers are influenced by his work. And also, he was really the pioneer of the internet fandom community. Not him personally, but his fans created, were the first big ones.
Yeah.
Because Buffy, when it started, it was like, yeah, that's based off a really not a great movie. But then when people watched it, like, hey, this is actually really, really different.
Much
and so it created this online community. And he was really that show was really the first show that really cared about the online fans. Like, there's a great story of, for their official boards, at one point, they're like, hey, like, let's get together and meet up, have a meet up. Apparently, the actors got wind of it and goes, hey, we want to come. So they did. And then it became kind of this big tradition of the actors joining in on this party every year. So yeah, that's really where a lot of this internet community stuff came from. And.
Am I allowed to interject here with a fun story about his writing in comics? So when he signed on to do the X-Men for Marvel, he freaked out because, and this is a story from Warren Ellis, he was like, I don't know how to write for comics. Oh my God. And Warren Ellis goes, what's wrong? I mean, writing for comics is easy. And he says, Joss Whedon was like, no, it isn't. Look at this. Look at this. And Warren Ellis looks at it and it's an Alan Moore script. If you know what Alan Moore scripts are like, they are, you know, as thick as several torsos in many cases, because he doesn't trust his artist. And Joss was freaking out, and he was talking to Warren Ellis about this. Like, Warren, you gotta help me. And Warren Ellis goes, look, this is one of my scripts. It looks like a script. See how easy it is? And Joss is like, oh, well, I guess I can do this. But it's just a story for comic book fans that goes, yeah.
Joss Whedon was the first one to make the writers popular. Like, nowadays, like, you always hear about, you know, this person's writing for this show, and the executive producer for this show is doing this now. That was largely because of Joss Whedon and the popularity of his writing staff. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel. What was the big deal there?
The big deal was that it was... you certainly can't say it's the first of the genre shows, but it was the first that was in prime time that was aimed at the young adult audience, and it really kind of turned the tables and gave you something you didn't expect. With looking at the title and looking at, you know, who was playing the main character and everything like that, it's been kind of a key of what Joss does, which is He never gives you what you expect.
Unless what you expect is death.
Well, yeah, that was later though. But, I mean, it's become kind of ridiculous with Dollhouse, which is why, like, I was telling Amy this when I was first watching it, it was like, this just seems like an exercise in plot twists.
You mean like Alias?
No,
Alias didn't do it that much.
Season-long
stuff.
There's like a plot twist like every 5 minutes.
Yeah, totally.
Literally in some of these episodes.
Since I know many of us haven't really watched much of Buffy or Angel.
The only episode I have ever seen of Buffy is the musical episode, which people keep forcing down my throat.
Hmm.
I've seen the first season of Buffy. I was like, oh, it's fine. I'm sure that once I hit season two, that's really when everything starts.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And I will say that, okay, here's the thing about, at least for Buffy, Angel, and Dollhouse, which is a lot of times he'll have a very solid idea of what he wants to do and where he wants the show to go, but he doesn't always have the best start. Like, he'll always kind of like start it, and he'll have like a great idea of where he wants to take it. But then people have to wade through the stuff in order to build up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very true for Dollhouse.
Yeah. Well, since you're already on the topic of Dollhouse.
Wait, can I say that I've met the guy who plays Xander? Okay. I was working at a Japanese restaurant when I was in high school, and he came in to eat, and yeah, I got a Polaroid with him, and he signed it. He signed it, Howdy. I was like, oh.
Actually,
you know, he has a twin brother, by the way.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say that. You had to be careful because he has a twin brother, and people get them confused all the time, and his twin brother will sign Nicholas Brendan, even though his name is like, I think like Kelly Donovan or something like that. I can't remember his name, but it's like completely different name.
Well, if Lawrence Fishburne and Samuel L. Jackson can swap names for this purpose, I'm sure two twin brothers can.
Wait, they've done that before?
Someone's walked up to Samuel L. Jackson and said, I loved you in The Matrix. And so he just signed something for him, Lawrence Fishburne.
That's because Sam Jackson is awesome. I like how Sam Jackson has made it into yet another podcast without being at all related to the subject matter.
Let's go into this, because I know this is a more recent show and a lot more people here are following it. Dollhouse is kind of like Joss Whedon's return to Fox, and there was a lot of talk about, what are you doing, Joss? So what do you guys have to say about the show now that they've wrapped up with their first season, and some of us, mainly me and Andy, have pre-ordered the Blu-ray and have not seen the show yet, but we intend to 2 years from now.
First, slightly backtracking, well, and this will tie into Dollhouse as well, backtracking to what I was saying about slow starting, which is Buffy doesn't really start getting good until maybe halfway through season two. And then, season one has great moments.
It's entertaining, but it,
yeah. And then season two also has great moments, like in the first half, but when the story really starts kicking in for the second half of season two, you're like, oh wow, this is where he wants to do it. This is what he wants to do with this.
And then, luckily for Dollhouse, you only have to wait half a season.
And then for Angel, it's like that, basically, it starts off kind of, and then, once you hit episode 9, then you realize, oh crap, what the hell happened? And then it starts getting more interesting after that. But yeah, Dollhouse is very much like that, in that, I mean, like, one of the things that people kind of complained about was that Dollhouse is about rich people, you know, making their fantasies come true, which is not terribly relatable. But what you find out, what Joss really wanted to talk about was the technology and where it can go and what the consequences of that are, which is much, much, much more interesting than rich people living out the fantasies.
Yeah. It's very controversial, actually. Because it's almost just like, you know, enslavement, really, which is a topic that they kind of explore a little bit in season one.
This is your chance to talk about Dollhouse, Amy. This is it.
I don't want to spoil too much.
That's the main thing.
But okay, I'll say that Joss Whedon is getting better. You only have to wait until about episode 5 or 6 this time around, instead of 9 or a season and a half.
Going back to Firefly, I mean, that's what made Firefly great, was because it was very good from the get-go.
Yeah, from the very beginning.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, part of the reason for that was because they never knew whether or not they were going to have another episode. They never knew if and when the axe was going to fall on them, so they said, better cram everything we got in here.
That, and they also had a lot of great actors and great characters.
Mm-hmm.
That really drove the show. I mean, that was one of the weak points of Dollhouse, was that, and I was complaining about this, was that, you know, like, you have the actives, or the dolls, whatever you want to call them, and they don't have any personality of their own. Well, I mean, none that is actually interesting. And then the rest of the characters seem very devoid of emotion or anything like that, except for Topher, who is just this geeky guy. Yeah, it's just like there's nothing that really made me care about these characters, because the characters changed every episode.
Right. Well, I mean, of the characters that are not actives, I mean, they develop over time, which is why we keep saying, you know, give it a few episodes before you judge it, because, you know, it takes some time to develop those characters. I mean, it's hard, right? I mean, when you think about it, it's like, how do you introduce these characters so that you care about them right away? And so it takes a little time. You know, I forgive Joss for it.
Well, in his previous shows, he was good with, you know, even if he knows that the characters are going to be much more interesting later on, he still made them interesting early on.
Yeah.
One good example, and okay, I'll spoil a little bit of it, is just the character of Alexis Denisov plays, which is Wesley Wyndham Price. He's introduced in Buffy season 3 and becomes a main character in Angel. And I could tell you from the Buffy to like the later seasons of Angel, completely, totally different characters. And he does a really good job of bridging between those two personas.
A rogue demon hunter. So does that mean you hunt rogue demons? Or?
No, it's like, I'm a rogue demon hunter. He goes, oh, really? What's a rogue demon?
Let's go into something. Like, we were talked about this briefly. Joss Whedon did come up with something really cool last year, which was the Dr. Horrible show. Well, not show, but this
sing-along blog.
Series, sing-along blog, yeah. And it's just a huge phenomenon in terms of that medium, and we haven't really seen it carry over that much towards other things that are popular now. I think the one I can think of that's closest is The Guild, right?
Yeah, The Guild
predates Dr. Horrible, and it was Joss Whedon's inspiration to make Dr. Horrible was seeing The Guild.
All right, so what did you guys think? Because I remember last year, I finally watched it. I actually just downloaded it off iTunes after everyone was like, oh, you should see it. I'm like, fine, I'll watch it.
Once again, it does start kind of slowly, but it starts really well because Neil Patrick Harris is always so easy to be like in any of his roles. He's just so likable, even when he's playing a crack-snorting...
himself.
Druggy. A crack-snorting car-stealing self. And so anyway, He makes up for his slow start by having his slow start be Neil Patrick Harris. So it's totally cool. Episode 2 is the greatest thing ever.
I love episode 2.
It's great. Yeah.
That's the best part.
Episode 2 is the best part. Actually, Sung told me something that on the way back from San Diego Comic Con that I didn't know because I don't own the DVDs for Dr. Horrible yet, which is a crime, and I will fix that soon. Something I was complaining about was that, you know, Neil Patrick Harris has been on Broadway. He was in Rent for a while as Mark, and
still amazes me. I don't know why.
And so the thing is that, you know, it's really obvious to see his stage experience when you're watching Dr. Horrible because he's really acting with his body language. He's really got a set of pipes on him. He's very dramatic. And then when you see in episode 2, when he's on the same screen as Felicia Day, you're like, why did they put him up against a limp noodle? And according to some, that was intentional on their part, where their takes of her singing well and acting. And they said, no, don't do that. We don't want good actors in this. We don't want good singers. We want you to be worse at this.
Well, no, that wasn't her character. Her character was supposed to be a little more dainty, and she was singing like a big pop star. And they're like, no, that's not quite the right sound we're looking for.
Slower and with less intensity.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't necessarily agree with that, because it on repeated viewings, it kind of lowered my enjoyment of it. Although I still really do enjoy Dr. Horrible.
I guess that's the main thing. When you think musical, you expect everyone to just break out into song fully.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily that it would break the illusion of these people bursting into song at random. I mean, we've been trained since childhood that people will sometimes just burst into song. And we accept that. Yeah, that was an opportunity for Danny and I that we totally missed.
Sorry.
Stop, no singing.
Oh, Father, I want to sing. But yeah, I mean, that was something that was cool. What about other people's opinions on it?
I thought it was great. I mean, like, I hadn't even watched The Guild at that point. I had heard a lot about it. And then, you know, when the strike happened... It's funny because the first word of it that got out was an interview with Neil Patrick Harris. And he was going to ask, so what's coming up for you? And he said, like, well, I have this project. And he says, like, it's like total BS, like obviously fake thing. And then he goes, oh, yeah, and I'm also doing this musical with Joss Whedon called Dr. Horrible Sing On Blog. So for a while, there was this online debate going, like, wait, was he joking about that second part? Because you know, like, he does know Allison Hannigan, who knows Joss Whedon, and he's also best friends with a girl that was also in a Whedon show, and I'm blanking on her name, Amy Acker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so you're like, so it's really possible that that, you know, is true. And then on Whedon-esque.org, I believe is the site, Joss actually posts, like, occasionally. Yeah, occasionally. And this is where this post was coming from, like, and people were responding about it. And Joss was like, well, I guess the cat is bagless. But he's like, yes, it's true. And I'm writing it, and it's going to have Bleach today and blah, 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 blah. So it's like, that was the first official word of it. Yeah, it was, the first episode was awesome. Second episode was awesome. The third episode were like, I remember we were at Jen's place. Jen's been on the podcast before, of like quarter of an episode.
She won that contest.
Yeah.
When I told her to change her answer, yes.
Yeah, anyways. So like the first two episodes had come out at that point, and so I saw the page and like, okay, so I guess the third episode not out yet, because it's still grayed out, but because like, oh wait, no, what if you hit the refresh button? So you hit refresh, third episode, oh my god. And we watched the third episode like that. Wasn't as good.
Yeah.
They reached a point in the third episode and you suddenly occurs to you, there is no way in the world this is going to end as well as the second episode did. And it really couldn't. Because the second episode was just too awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who else loves the groupies? Marissa Tenshiro? Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is his hair.
Do the weird stuff.
Four sweater vests.
There's a big argument about how many sweater vests, because apparently, like, I think it was Marissa who was trying to argue for a higher number for then, like, later on she was like, I have no idea why I wanted that number.
All right, this is the last chance to talk about Dr. What? Horrible before we start.
He's doing a Dr. Horrible comic, right?
Aren't they doing another installment of the musical too?
Yeah, they're supposed to be working on a sequel.
Oh yeah, by the way, if you get the DVDs, commentary, the musical is awesome.
Oh, yes. That is pretty awesome.
Especially the song There Are No Asians in Hollywood.
There's their favorite iPhone game. There's a whole song dedicated to that called Ninja Ropes or something like that.
Oh yeah.
I do actually want to mention one thing about the DVD, which was really interesting, was it was part of Amazon's custom DVD kind of service, in which every time that you did order one, they would actually press the DVD, print out the artwork, and then send it to you. So each individual order was just that. Okay. So there's only a certain number of them out there. Of course, you can always make more. But that was also really interesting that they decided to go with that format rather than just make a whole bunch in the beginning.
Well, that's because in the beginning, like, they never did it for profit at all.
Yep.
And so
it was
like,
a proof of concept.
Yeah. And so like, they're like, money? Really? And they really didn't want the money, so that's why they were doing this way.
All right, so I also asked you guys one other thing, too. What is your favorite Joss Whedon project? I know you guys are going to say, like, oh, I love them all, or I love these ones. You got to pick one. You got to name one.
Firefly.
You know,
No song, just say it.
I knew this would get sung.
Yeah, because Kevin asked me this earlier, and I thought about it for kind of a while. I have to say Angel, because it, like, I would have said Firefly if it had lasted longer. I mean, and because the Firefly characters are just solid through and through, and the stories are solid through and through, but Angel had these great story arcs, and they also had great characters. They had a lot fewer characters, but they were really well written. And the story arcs were just amazing.
It also had time to do all of these things.
Yes.
Which is a luxury that many shows don't get. Andy?
Firefly.
Wonder Woman! What? What are you laughing?
It must have actually been produced.
No! Now I have to find another answer. X-Men.
Titan A.
And Firefly for me, although I do love Titan A.
You can't call the planet Bob.
I think that was Ben Edlund's contribution.
Yes, probably.
Planet Bob.
I have to admit, I do like Angel for the reasons that Sun was explaining, and I just remember from seeing the very last episode when it was being aired. I didn't know it was the last episode at the time, because I don't watch commercials at all. And so when I got to the very end of that, it's like, okay, where's the other half? I got closed. Because that was such a great episode, just like, you know, what was it? People who don't care about others never understand the motivations of people who do. It's okay. We won't care.
All right, and to close this off, your favorite Joss Whedon moment. This can include anything from panels, extras on DVDs. I'm sure you guys really researched this.
Who are we starting with? Are we starting with me?
I'll start then.
Okay,
so you guys
go.
Some more time, and this way no one else can take mine. And my favorite is from Astonishing X-Men number 16.
I know this one.
With Wussy Wolverine. Yeah. When he cuts out the little paper dolls.
I'm the best there is at what I do. And what I do is very pretty! Yeah, I was eyeing you because I was thinking of taking that one, and I knew you would try and punch me in the mouth for it.
Or the soul.
Or you try and punch me in the soul.
I can't find yours.
Oh!
No, go ahead. What's yours?
No, go the other way around the table.
All right, Amy.
I don't know if I have one. I'm going to pass.
Oh, I see. A team player.
But yeah, in terms of just like defining moments, I'm going to have to go with that last episode of Angel that I didn't know was the last one. Just because it was really exciting and it was like, why are you going to news? The hell? And check the internet, What? That was the last episode? You mother! Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, because, you know, the very end of it, all hell breaks loose in about as literal a way as possible. And, you know, you see monsters roaming the streets. Yeah, screw that. And, you know, there's just like goggles and stuff flying through the air and, you know, then the crew starts, you know, gets ready to charge because they know they're going to die from this. And, you know, at which point Angel goes, I don't know about you, but I want to slay that dragon. And that's where it ends the series.
All right. Mine is a recurring theme that Joss uses, and he says it specifically in the commentary for the last episode of Firefly, I believe, which is Objection Space. And he also... It's a line that Angel says somewhere in season 5, I believe, which was, and I could be slightly wrong with the quote, but if nothing we do matters, then all that matters is what we do. And basically, it was the theme for Angel. It was what Angel was all about, because Angel is this guy who is basically looking for redemption because he was a vampire, he killed lots of people in his past. And it's him just trying to make up for all that. And by the end of the episode, he goes, you know what? Screw that, because redemption doesn't matter. And if you're only doing it for redemption, then you're not doing it for the right reasons. And so, yeah, that to me was kind of brilliant. And it's what drives the Serenity plot too. Cause, Mal is just trying to do the right thing because it's right.
Andy?
Okay.
Well, how do you follow up on that?
Well, I just thought it was really cool when Colossus came back to life.
In X-Men. That was awesome. I like ninjas.
Cool. I like it when Wolverine goes to Japan.
And he becomes a samurai. And he does that thing with his claws.
Geeks!
Snicked. Yep. No, never seen that before.
No. So that actually is your answer, Andy?
No, my answer is actually in Firefly. I don't remember which episode it was. I'm sure someone's about to tell me where sits the guy down. We don't want your money.
This is all the money. This is all the money Niska gave us. Oh yeah. Tell him that the job didn't work.
Keep the money. Use it to buy a funeral. It doesn't matter where you go or how far you fly. I will find you, and the last thing you see will be my blade.
Darn.
Don't.
This is the money. No, I get it. We're good. We're solid.
Best thing for both of us. I'm right there with you.
That's pretty much the last scene of The Train Job, which is the second episode the first episode after the pilot.
My favorite is Penny's giving it up. She's giving it up hard.
Oh, yeah.
With Captain Hammer now. And these are not the hammer. The hammer is my penis.
Man, well, we don't have to do our quote But as usual, that pretty much wraps up this episode on Joss Whedon. Do you have any closing thoughts? Because this is the last chance you have to talk about Whedon.
Oh no, I'm gonna plug it in future podcasts, whatever.
There is a great panel in which I believe it was WonderCon the year that Serenity came out, actually, it was like he was showing clips of the Serenity and he was showing, you know, Summer Glau doing the fight scenes, stuff like that. And then one moment asked him during the QA sessions, like, she goes, so, is this a general foot fetish you have or is it just Summer Glau? And then, and Josh goes, like, puts his hand like in his face, like, oh man, I'm so busted.
Wasn't it also the Joss Whedon Dr. Horrible one where Felicia Day had her hands under the table with her phone?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, don't mind me, I'm just twittering.
Or I'm just tweeting.
No, it's like, I'm just twittering down here.
Anyways, any quotes, sound-offs, or any shout-outs you have to round out this Joss Whedon episode, which we've, you know, veiled under the Serenity name?
I'm looking forward to more Neil Patrick Harris singing. He's singing in the Batman Brave and the Bold musical episode, which I'm told is awesome, by the way.
That's a show I need to watch.
It is a show you need to watch. You especially need to watch the Robin episode and any episode with Aquaman in it. So anyway, Joss Whedon stuff. So Wonder Woman is officially dead, or is it when that strange undead
spot? You're
not going
to see that Wonder Woman.
Yeah,
no, okay. You aren't.
Just checking. So it's officially dead, right? Or is
yeah,
it just effectively
see,
dead?
No, the project's not ever dead. You're just not going to see the Joss Whedon version.
Nothing ever dies in Hollywood.
Also, I can kill you with my brain.
Oh, damn. That was the big Firefly moment for me that I forgot to bring up. Jane, the end of Ariel.
Oh, yeah.
Where
his betrayal.
Is about to chuck him out the airlock for what he did. For trying to sell them out. Was it Dan?
Spoiler.
Yeah. And he's basically Jane's on the communicator, realizes he's going to die, and he asks him, "What are you going to tell them? About what? About why I'm dead? I'll make something up." I haven't thought of it yet.
I haven't thought of it. Yeah.
Make something up. Don't tell them what I did. And it's like the first moment you realize that Jane actually cares about something other than his own, you know, well-being.
No, it wasn't the first time, but it was the first time he really expresses it.
Yeah, and yeah, that was huge for me. That actually, you know, moved up Jane from ordinary thug to one of the most awesome things on the show.
From ordinary thug to amusing thug,
awesome thug.
You mean, like those, like the two butterfly guys on Venture Brothers. What is it, 21 and 32? Is it or something like that?
Forget,
random
numbers.
All right, so that pretty much wraps up this episode. You can always check out old episodes, the schedule, all sorts of stuff about the podcast at www.s-words-podcast.com. And you can also email us at feedback@s-words-podcast.com. You can go ahead and send us anything, suggestions, ideas, whatever. We're always fine with it. And so let's round off this default ending with the usual thing that we like to tell everybody. You can always find Dom in his happy little place.
www.twitter.com/swords.
You can't beat the tweet!
Isn't it?
Can't beat the tweet!
Isn't it s_words? s_words.
I'm glad this is our default one because I think it's very good as a default ending, don't you think?
Yeah.
Alright, cool.
There's no place I can be since I found serenity. But you can't take the sky from me.
Da 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 da
da da da da da da da da da da.
Ah, Mars, bringer of war.
How do we follow that?
We don't.
Good night, everyone.
Wasn't even Joss Whedon related.
It was Ben Edlund.